So I have a lot of leaders who vent their frustrations to me about their irrational and emotional athletes, and even sometimes their athletes' parents. Probably the most common reason players get emotional that frustrates a coach is that they get angry when they don't get playing time that they think they deserve. And I recently had a call with a coach, many like this, but this coach was super frustrated because he knew they were being completely irrational. Like, there was no logical argument for this athlete playing more than anybody else on the team when you look at the data or even just any general observer, whether they are practice or games. Yet it's not just the facts that matter, right? The emotions, the story that athlete was telling himself, that all matters. It affects that team's culture. Another common trigger for players getting upset is when we challenge them, when we coach them. I just returned from a long 12-day trip working with teams all around America. And one stop, I was observing a game, and the coach calmly communicates to a player how he misses a defensive assignment during the game. The player literally blows up during the game, and he stops playing. He just stops playing altogether, throws a complete tantrum. Now, as an observer, and I'm not even just the coach, I was ticked. Like, this guy, he has no right to be upset. The coach is just doing his job. The player's reaction is totally inexcusable. Except telling that player, especially in that emotional moment, telling that player, you know, who quit on the play, that he has no right to be angry, well, that isn't going to be very effective as well. The reality is emotions are facts. Our athletes' emotions matter. So the question for us as leaders is this: what's our responsibility in helping our athletes and supporting them and working with them in managing their emotions? How can we help them to construct emotions that are more helpful for them and the team? Well, that's what we're going to unpack in today's episode of the podcast. I've got no doubt you're going to get a lot out of this episode. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast, the podcast to help you grow as a leader and build a better culture. My name is JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my friends and co-hosts, Nate Sanderson and Betsy Butterick. In addition to this podcast, I'm a leadership coach and culture consultant. To learn more about how my business, TOC, can support you, your team, or your organization, visit tocculture.com. To learn more about Betsy, her work as a leadership coach and communication specialist, go to betsybutterick.com.
Well, this week in the newsletter, I referenced a story that happened earlier in my career where I made a decision, JP and Betsy, that I was never going to be held hostage by a player's emotions again. If you didn't read the article, there was a situation at the end of a season. We were playing in a conference tournament game, and the quarterfinal game that we were in came down to the wire. It was a tie score with like 12 seconds left in the game. We were on defense, and we had who essentially was our sixth man of the year playing in the game because she was a pretty solid defender at the time. And she gets a steal with 5 seconds left, dribbles the length of the floor, lays it in at the buzzer, and we go on to win in advance to the semifinals so the following day. And at the time, great celebration. Everybody is super happy. And everybody, maybe except for the sixth man, who was excited that she made the shot and thought, finally, this was going to be the moment that I recognized that she should be in the starting lineup. She'd been chomping at the bit for the entire year. Mom had been complaining throughout the year about when was she going to get her shot, and she wasn't being treated fairly. And she thought, surely this was going to be the moment. And so we come back the next day, getting ready for the semifinal game, and I write the starters up on the board in the locker room, as we always did, and Callie's name was not in the starting lineup, and she lost her mind, refused to come out of the locker room, bawling, sobbing, sent an assistant coach in after her, won't come out, sent another player after her, won't come out. And so 8 minutes left in the warm-up, one of her teammates who was in the starting lineup says, "Coach, we can't win without her. She can start for me." And I gave in. And so she started, and we went through and ended up winning that game. But essentially, for the rest of the year, I pretty much lost all credibility with most of my team and the parents at that point, because I responded to what I would label with my own children, a tantrum that caused us to choose a different decision than maybe what was best for the team overall. Well, I'm sure if you've been coaching very long, you've been in a situation like that where you've felt at least influenced or afraid of how a player is going to respond emotionally to a decision that you have to make for the team. And I think JP and Betsy, this is probably more of an acute awareness that we have to have as coaches today than ever before. I mean, I think back in the day, maybe when transactional coaching was more the norm, the coach had the freedom to do whatever they want, to say whatever they want, to behave however they want, and players had the responsibility of just dealing with it. But we know that's not the case today. And it doesn't take very long for you to scroll through Twitter or to look through the newspapers or to look online for stories where a player's emotional state got the coach in some trouble. A player's emotional response because they felt a certain way, they lost their confidence, they lost their love for the game, they felt threatened by a coach, whatever it might be, investigations and allegations stemming from the way players feel have made coaches, I think, even more uncomfortable or uncertain about what our responsibility is to how a player feels as a result of our coaching. And I think that's the question that we want to try to kick around a little bit today, ultimately, is where does the responsibility lie when decisions that are sometimes difficult for individuals to accept, yet most beneficial for the team, who's responsible for the feelings that are inevitably going to follow when those decisions are made?
Again, Nate, my first thought is, oh gosh, how much time do we have? Because this comes up a lot, and it comes up from both, I get to see it from both sides in the work that I do, where I'm sitting in rooms with coaches or staffs, and they're talking about, oh my gosh, this player is so emotional. Right. And even just hearing that language, it's like, okay, what's our judgment about what emotions mean? And how might that be impacting our ability to coach that individual? You know, have we made a judgment about their emotional state based off of an emotion they've experienced before? And then sometimes even without being aware of it, are we biasing our coaching in some way because we know, oh, they're going to respond emotionally? What judgments do we have as coaches around what emotions are, their usefulness, their appropriateness? And I think if we're going to explore this path about coach responsibility for athlete emotion, it has to in some way start with the coach. What is our own awareness of our ability and capacity to hold emotion, to recognize emotion? What's our emotional intelligence? What's our emotional vocabulary? How comfortable are we with the fact that our players have emotions? And what judgments might we be making that don't serve the individual athlete or the team as a whole?
Yeah, I absolutely love that challenge to coaches to reflect on themselves, Betsy. And there's a lot of challenges just even in what you just shared there. I think what has been problematic in coaching for so long is we have felt by us becoming the head coach, we now have this card, this license to throw tantrums, to get really upset about things. And that's just called coaching, right? That's oftentimes what people call coaching on the sidelines and how we respond to things. But yet we seem to, at the same time, disregard the feelings and the emotions of the players. And so, but I think it would really come back to, you know, one of the challenges I would really extend here to coaches comes from, you know, our conversations with Dr. Bruce Perry, you know, over the years on this podcast and his work around trauma and mental health and, you know, his work in neuroscience. And he always says a dysregulated adult will never help to regulate another, individual. And so if we're not regulating our own emotions, we're really hindering our effectiveness to be able to help our athletes work through their own emotions. Not only that, I think so often what I'm seeing and when I do 360 feedbacks with teams is that players and staff will often say, this team goes where coach goes. Coach is having a bad day, we're all having a bad day. If coach is having a good day, we're having a good, you know, and that's really common across so many different teams. I remember having a conversation with a player just last week around, you know, some of the feedback. They said that way, that's kind of unfair, you know, on the coach, because it's like, we can't expect this individual to be perfect. But I think that's the, you know, the challenge of leadership is that we really do even when our players, maybe our staff, maybe the fans, everybody else is losing their minds, we have to be that rock for so many other people because they will follow our example. So first off, our example impacts them. And then if we can come in regulated, then we actually have a chance of actually helping our athletes work through some of those emotions.
When I think of this question about responsibility, you know, I guess I posed this at the beginning, thinking about how responsible am I for how a player feels about my decisions. I think we could back up a step here and kind of follow up what you're saying there, JP, that ultimately I'm not going to have total control over how a player feels, nor probably should I, but I do have to take some responsibility for how I'm acting in and out of my emotion. And so when you throw that word regulated, showing up regulated, what does that mean for a coach? What does that look like? And how does that benefit a team when we can put ourselves in a place where we're regulated first?
Yeah, and there's so many challenges with self-regulation. I want to back up to that word responsibility. As you were talking, Nate, I was thinking, you know, break it into two pieces. What is our responsibility, our ability to respond as a coach to the context, the situation within the game, to our own emotions as we experience them in response to the game, and also to the emotions of our athletes? So what is our ability to respond, our responsibility when it comes to emotion in a coaching context? So that's where my mind goes. When we talk about regulation, and again, as a parent of two small children, a 9-month-old, a 2-year-old, this comes up a lot. And I was listening to a parenting podcast, Dr. Becky, child psychologist. She's talking about the fact that you cannot regulate emotion with logic. And I think about how many times I've tried to talk my 2-year-old out of an emotional state through logic. And I, as someone who works with emotion often, I figure I should know better. And yet in the moment, what I'm trying to do, I think, is a very logical approach to regulation. And sometimes it totally misses the mark. My toddler doesn't need to be talked out of, nor do many of our athletes need to be talked out of an emotional state. Often the first step is acknowledging that they're having an emotional response. Or even within ourselves as a coach, regulation often starts with acknowledging that we are experiencing heightened emotions. Can we name that emotion? Do we have the vocabulary to be able to accurately label it? Can we sense where is it coming up for us in our body? And is that a place that maybe we can send an intentional breath to, or that we can release some tension muscularly? You know, regulation for me starts with awareness, and that awareness is directly tied to our ability to respond to our own emotions and the emotions of others.
Yeah, and I just to slightly build off what Betsy's sharing there, I mean, when it comes to that regulation, if we're having this stress response and we're fully triggered, we're having that tantrum that Betsy's talking about with her kids, and I'm so familiar and I got to experience plenty over the Christmas break here with my 3-year-old as well too, where, you know, we become in that state, we're not accessing our logical brain, we're not able to think through situations, and we're just reacting. And so when we're in that state as well, though, others are more likely to follow, right? So if I have this emotional meltdown as a parent, my children are more likely to join in there. So it's about that regulation. And when we're talking about with that awareness becoming just that awareness of what you're feeling in your body, what your thoughts are, what your even just where your breath's at, just having that type of awareness, I think is honestly, that's going to help to regulate you in so many different ways there. That'll just be helpful just to be able to pause in that moment and you know, sense yourself, to notice in yourself what's coming up for you and what's so triggered about this. I remember talking to a coach just last week who was really, really upset around something a player had said to him. And, you know, the feeling for him was this outwardly of anger. And we really just had to spend like 15 to 30 minutes just really trying to unpack really what was beneath that. But it started with coming back to the body, his feet on the ground, his breath, and what he was feeling in that moment. That's where we started.
Yeah, JP, again, there's so much we can learn from kids, right? And so when you mentioned the triggering events, I think that for any coach listening, that could be a really helpful step towards regulation, or the awareness that leads to regulation, is to first ask yourself, what are my known triggers in a sport context? And I think about, as a parent, like whining, I can't do it. Like, the rule in our house is you get nothing when you whine. And yet developmentally, sometimes my toddler whines and it just sets me off so fast. Like, I can feel kind of the heat rising in my brain, scrambling. And I know I'm not emotionally at my best when I'm dealing with an individual who's whining. As a coach, it might be, you know, talking back. That may be a trigger for me. You know, I tell an individual that they need to do something and then it's challenged right away. So just getting really clear for yourself as a coach, what are my emotional triggers? Whatever the emotion happens to be. And there's also positive emotional triggers. You know, like when I see someone do something that we've been working on for weeks that they've never done before, and then they execute it in the game. Oh my gosh, emotional trigger for joy or elation. So not all triggers are bad, but asking yourself, what are my triggers as a coach in a sport context? What are the things that often elicit a strong emotion in me can be a great step towards awareness that then lends itself to the ability to self-regulate.
It's interesting you bring that up, Betsy, and I know this isn't a parenting podcast, but as JP referenced over Christmas break, there's lots of opportunities to explore our emotional regulation and ability to do so. And I think of a couple of triggers for me that surprise me with my own kids, but have really made me reflect on that exact question of, like, are there places in coaching where I seem to jump to, like, DEFCON 5, like, in an instant that doesn't make sense? You know, when my kids fight in the living room, I get angry like instantly. When they fight in the backseat of a car, I get angry instantly. And I am sure why. It's because my father got angry with me when I fought with my brother in those places. But the fact that it, like, just puts me in a completely different emotional state right away is a huge obstacle for me to be able to respond the way that I want to with my own kids. And I was thinking about, you know, with JP, you were referencing Dr. Bruce Perry. There's another phrase that he uses often in his book that I think has been helped me to find some clarity about how to respond in coaching situations. He talks about how our emotional state there is like an emotional contagion. It's contagious to others, right? So what does that look like for me in coaching? Well, Sunday, we were playing in a fourth grade girls basketball tournament. Thriller, let me tell you, 7-7, going into overtime, all right? We lose the tip, we come down the floor, we get a stop. My daughter takes a shot with 5 seconds left and misses. And the ball is deflected out of bounds. We're playing in a tiny elementary school cafeteria that has baskets on either end. There's 20 parents on each side, and people are going crazy. It's loud. It's exciting. And so we call a timeout to draw up an inbounds play. And the girls come over, and they're like frantic. Like, they're yelling. The girls on the bench are jumping up and down. The parents are going crazy. The other coach is screaming at their kids to get over to the sideline. And just in that split second, I just thought, how do I want them to walk out of this timeout? And how do they see that in me? And so when everybody else is going berserk, I just grabbed those five kids, got in a tight circle. I said, okay, in really calm, you know, like, this is just regular 10 o'clock in the morning on a Monday classroom voice. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to stand here. You're going to stand here. And not excitedly, not with, you know, the game's on the line, we got to make a play. Just very calm and matter of fact, told everybody exactly what to do. We go out, we execute the play, make the layup, we win 9-7, coach of the year right here, okay? But the idea is what again, I brought back to was, what's the emotional state I want our players in, and how do I model that for them, you know, in the opportunity that I have in that timeout? So another part of my reflection on the drive home from that game was, those moments happen in sports all the time, where emotions are going crazy and there's failure and there's excitement and there's a possibility of success. And I thought to myself, with those fourth grade girls, we have done nothing to prepare them for what that moment might be like. And so here I am trying to manage it in the 20 seconds that we have a timeout. But it really made me think, what more can I do to try to prepare them, to frame our sports experience in a way that says we're going to experience some wild emotional swings throughout the year? I think there's more that I can do, that we can do as coaches, to help maybe prescribe some preventative medicine so that we're not always just reacting to these intense emotional experiences from our players.
Absolutely, Nate. And you bring to mind for me a colleague of mine, Piers Kowalski. He's out of Colorado Springs. He's done a lot of work historically around high-risk occupations. So think military, think firefighters, first responders. He is now part of Michael Gervais' team. And one of the sessions that I've watched him do several times now is around nervousness with athletes. And what are they making it mean? These sensations of nervousness before a big competition, or if they're not in sport, sensations before a big moment in their life, and the tendency to think of nerves as negative. And then the brain starts to spiral with all the other negative things that are going to happen because I'm too nervous, right? And what he does beautifully throughout this session is help them unlearn what nerves are and what they mean, and relearn the way that the body, without them efforting to do so, is preparing them for high performance and success. And so even just this idea, and I can picture coaches out there being like, okay, guys, this is great, except I don't consider myself a highly emotionally intelligent individual. Emotions were not openly talked about in my family or upbringing. Maybe I personally don't put a lot of stock in emotions or express my emotions. So how am I supposed to do this with my team in terms of coaching? If the baseline is presence, if we pause to think that what can be most supportive, whether it's for your athlete or your assistant coach or your toddler, it is not for you to be able to name their emotion, to fix their emotion or move them from an emotional state. Can you be present with them in that heightened emotional state? Just as you were mentioning with those fourth grade girls in the timeout, it's like, can your presence be the thing that helps facilitate regulation or helps offer stability so that we can get back to what's helpful? And for me, that's a question I always ask. Whatever the emotional response, whether it's a player, you know, punching a wall or a backboard, you know, a standard, because they're so upset about a missed call or the fact that they missed a shot they really wanted to make. It's like, okay, is this helpful? Because if it's not helpful, let's make a different choice to get us back on track to do something that supports the goal that we're in pursuit of. So for me, asking, is it helpful? And also, have I worked to cultivate presence? Can I be with whatever emotions are coming up, my own or other people's? That can be a starting point for regulation and success as well.
I love that. Starts with presence. And then I would just add on that presence with curiosity. I'm curious, not judgmental of my own emotions in this. Like, I shouldn't be angry. I shouldn't be feeling this way. Or they shouldn't be, you know, if it's with curiosity with our players, they shouldn't be feeling this way. Well, they are, or you are feeling this way. And so if we can just step into those moments with presence and curiosity, rather than judgment for ourselves and for others, I think that's honestly really, really important. It's hard to do. It's probably easier to do when you can kind of you agree with why they might be upset. Oh, the referee screwed the call up, right? Like, okay, I can be more present with this individual. I can empathize. I think what's really hard for us as coaches is to be present and curious when we have disregarded their emotion, when we said they shouldn't feel that way. They shouldn't be angry that they're getting dropped from the starting lineup. They've been playing horrible. They shouldn't be angry around this because I've done all these other things, right? So we have this argument, this judgment already made based on the situation, and we lose that curiosity. And I think that's, you know, that presence with curiosity is so, so important. Not easy to do though, when we really already have built it out in our head that they're wrong for feeling this way.
And to play off of that, JP, when you say it's hard, one of the biggest barriers that I see is the misunderstanding that, well, if I validate their emotion, that also means I'm agreeing with why they have that emotion. And that's one thing that, if anyone listening, if that's true for you currently, allow me to offer, it doesn't have to be true any longer. You can validate someone's experience, the emotional response that they're having to a situation, without also agreeing that they should be having that experience. So in that example you just mentioned, JP, kid that gets dropped from the starting lineup, that's very upsetting for them, even if it makes sense that they're dropped from the starting lineup because they have been underperforming. So not only is it upsetting that they're no longer in that starting position, they're also probably already upset that they haven't been playing as well as they want to. So it's easy for us as coach to think, oh, well, they've been playing like crap. Of course they shouldn't be in the starting lineup. They shouldn't be upset about that. They should understand. Can we validate the fact that, hey, this is tough? I know you haven't been playing the way that you want to, and now you've been taken out of the starting lineup. And I've got to believe that's really hard. Do you want to tell me what's coming up for you right now? And then go back to that curiosity that you mentioned before. But I think one of those barriers to getting curious is, well, if I validate what they feel, then that means that I agree with them. Doesn't have to be true. You can validate and be curious, and in doing so, create connection that allows them to have their own emotional experience separate from whatever decision you've made.
So here's a follow-up that I would have to that, Betsy, and that is, but isn't the player responsible ultimately for continuing with whatever their expectation is in their new role as a player coming off the bench? Like, I think sometimes as a coach, okay, I can understand. I dropped JP from the starting lineup. If it was me, I'd be pissed off too. I'd be frustrated. I'd be disappointed. I'd probably lose some confidence in myself. Maybe I think coach doesn't believe in me anymore. Like, I can understand in a lot of ways how I would feel in those situations. And yet as a coach, I come back to this idea, but you still, JP, have a responsibility to the team now in your new role to show up and to give effort and to excel at coming off the bench and provide value. And I think sometimes that gets lost. And I think sometimes it's hard, or maybe we just don't know how to have that conversation without it feeling like I'm disregarding what they're feeling and just getting back to the thing that this team needs. So walk us through that. How do we help to get them to a place, maybe not just experiencing that emotion, but getting through it so that they can continue to function and add value to the team?
Yeah, and you mentioned something interesting before of, are we only practicing how to move through an emotion when we're already in a heightened emotional state? Because if we are, I would argue that we're not doing the work that we could do in a really effective way to help prepare our athletes to regulate emotion when they most need to, or when it's most helpful or beneficial. One of the challenges in the situation you just mentioned is oftentimes coaches think in terms of polarity. So yes, this is really upsetting. And I know you're going to be upset, and I'm going to focus there. In fact, I'm even nervous to tell you this because I know how upset you're going to be. Or they're thinking, well, yeah, but you need to take responsibility for your new role to help your teammates. And so you need to put that emotion aside, and you really need to focus on being a good teammate in this moment. When we put it into one category or another, we miss the opportunity as a coach to help them regulate by building a bridge. Can we start with whatever's coming up for them in the moment, and then help them process and move towards the place where now they can focus on being a good teammate? And what does that look like? For me, when I'm working with teams, and most recently, this was a basketball team, so I put it in a basketball context. I asked the group, how does it feel when you're getting pressed? You know, think about the best defensive team in your conference. When they are putting a full court press on you, what does it feel like when you're getting trapped by two people? And of course, the usual responses of, you know, like, oh, I can barely breathe. You know, it's suffocating. I panic. It's like, yeah, that's often what it feels like when we're overcome with a strong emotion as well. And then I asked them, what's the most effective way to beat a press? And without fail, the whole room said pass. Their coach was very proud. So yes, pass to beat a press. Same thing. Use those acronyms, PASS, pause. The first step that we can help athletes do as coaches is pause. And sometimes that pause is our presence. Sometimes that pause is, you know, hands on shoulders saying like, hey, I know that was a big deal. Right? Like they just missed the layup to lose the game instead of making the layup to win the game. Right? I know that was a big deal. So pause for a moment. The second, accept. And this is often the hardest part for anybody, is can we accept that what happened just happened? Regardless of how we feel about it and how much we want to change it, can we accept that this is where we are? Like that was a big deal. That wasn't what you wanted. And that's really hard. So can we pause? Can we recognize we're having an emotional response? Can we accept, whether we like it or not, that what happened just happened? And then the two S's, the first is sensation. One of the things that often happens that I've learned with emotion is we're so often focusing on the trigger, the thing that caused us to feel a big emotion. In continuing to focus on the trigger, we stay stuck in a heightened emotional response. Like think about an official missing what we thought was an easy call, or calling a foul when it wasn't us that fouled. And now we have to get subbed out. We can't be in the end of the game. We keep focusing on the trigger, that bad call, instead of focusing on the sensation. What am I feeling in response to that bad call? What is the emotion? Where am I sensing it in my body? And then the second S is support. What can I do? What's controllable by me as an individual to support my ability to release whatever energy or emotion I'm feeling right now to get back to a place where I can now be helpful as a teammate, whether it's on the bench, on the floor. So thinking about this as a coach, can I help my athlete pause? Can I either do or say things that move them slightly towards acceptance, especially if they don't agree with the situation or like the situation? Can I help them focus on the sensation? Even with our language, you know, what are you feeling right now? I'm so frustrated. I'm pissed off. Like, okay, yeah, feel that. And then what's helpful? Like, what would be the next helpful thing from that space? So when you're overcome with emotion, when you feel pressed by emotion, it can be helpful to remember to pass.
Yeah. And if I could just add on to what Betsy's sharing there, I think one of the big things is oftentimes, I think as coaches, we really put an emphasis on the behaviors, right? Okay, you have this really disappointing situation and I listen, I hear you. Now let's focus on how we want you to behave. What does a good teammate look like? And those are really important. But that will often feel inauthentic and will be inauthentic because we won't have addressed what's underlying that. And beneath the behaviors is often our feelings, and beneath the feelings is our mindsets and our thinking. And so the more that we can say, hey, all right, I get this. You're feeling this way, right? Tell me a little bit more about that and get below that surface, like the surface. Like, what's the thinking behind this? What's the frustrations? And then just another great question is just, how's that serving you? How's that going to help you moving forward? What would be more beneficial ways of thinking about this situation? What are some alternative ways that you could view the situation and think about it? And once you start to change some of the thinking, sometimes those feelings start to change, and then the behaviors come more naturally and more authentic.
Yeah, I think all that's good. And something else that we've tried to walk in a little bit more is even just following up with that 24 hours later. You know, when we deliver difficult news on a Tuesday, they struggle through practice, they're coming back on Wednesday, and just shooting them a text Wednesday morning to see how they're, you know, how are they feeling about things, or how they, whatever, like just even that care. And Bruce Prey talks a lot about that as well, as being a treatment for trauma. And I know this is very small T trauma here most of the time, but it's the consistent care and relationship oftentimes that can bring them through those moments as well. And that goes back to what Betsy talked about again, is just working with them, rather than sometimes we feel like we're constantly working against their emotional state. And even that is a mindset that can be helpful. Another thing that we've really tried to lean into, JP and Betsy, and I know you guys have done obviously a lot of work with teams as well, is just normalizing the idea that sports is an emotional experience with a variety of emotions, even in the context of a game, but over the course of a season, for coaches and for players alike, you know, you can think of moments of euphoria when you drop the inbounds play and you win 9-7 in overtime and the gym's going crazy, and the moments of failure when, you know, you make the wrong play, you put the wrong substitute in, or a player doesn't make it, whatever it might be. And I think we've really tried to communicate to our parents and players, especially early in the season, that that is all baked into the sport experience, you know, and that part of us being successful is our ability to be able to anticipate and manage both the peaks and valleys that we're going to experience through the year, and acknowledging that, look, there's decisions we're going to have to make, whether it's playing time or it's strategy or it's starters and who's coming off the bench, that's going to yield different emotional responses from different people that are involved. And that's normal, right? And I think that even in of itself starts to frame this idea that there is going to be a little bit of struggle for everyone at some point or another. And that also allows us then to be a little more proactive in starting to talk about some strategies for when we get to that place, how do we want to respond individually and collectively? Are there ways that you guys have found successful to be able to do that with teams that you've worked with?
Part of that, Nate, for me is, and this is one of the quotes from psychology that I love, and it says, between stimulus and response, there's a space. In that space lies our ability to choose, and in our choice lies our growth and our freedom. And it's Viktor Frankl. And sometimes I'll use that quote as the opening slide to set up this whole conversation around choosing our response. You know, first, can we recognize the space that it's there, knowing that emotions are part of the game, whatever our sport happens to be? Can we recognize that we have this ability to choose? We may not feel like we can choose our emotional response, but maybe we can choose the behavior, or we can choose the words, or we can choose some element of what happens next that gives us some semblance of control for what many people would say is an uncontrolled emotional response. So I think for me, that's sometimes the starting point of conversation, is introducing that quote, just suggesting that perhaps they have a little more influence or control than they might have previously realized, and then starting to explore what can that look like for people? And can we maybe rethink what emotions mean? Even the labeling of positive emotions and negative emotions. Sometimes when I work with teams, I rephrase that concept of positive or negative as, let's think of emotions as having an energetic quality. Rage, for example. Like, rage is a very high energy emotion. Now, what do you want to do with that energy? How do you want to spend that energy? Or is that energy depleting you of the energy that you need to accomplish something that you're in pursuit of? So starting to think of emotions less as positive or negative, instead as energetic, introducing this idea that there is a small pause. What do we want to do in that space? How do we want to become aware of that space? Those are ways that I sometimes start to have the conversation with individuals and teams about working with emotion.
All right, just a quick timeout to tell you about an online course that can really help you with one of the biggest emotional triggers in sports, playing time. The Playing Time System course and resources will help you to effectively determine, communicate, and support player roles. The system is a compilation of strategies to address playing time issues. To get the course and resources, go to tocculture.com and click on courses in the header, or use the link in the details of this episode. Yeah, I really think Betsy hit on the head there with the importance of choice, you know, and really how we choose to respond. And I think as coaches, we can really work with them to help to choose the right way forward in a few ways. One is obviously questions are very empowering ways of like getting people to self-reflect, then think about, okay, what are more beneficial ways of responding? We've talked about that. I think to your point, Nate, is sometimes just time. So just giving the athlete time to process, to, if at all possible, obviously within the context of a game, that's not always, you don't necessarily have a load of the time, but they're a difficult, I remember years ago, I mean, I was just constantly telling players they were dropped from a lineup right before the game. I gave them no time to be able to reset themselves. And then, you know, years ago, you know, a few years ago, I was just coaching that pro team and I had to give the player bad news that where they were on the lineup, they weren't happy with it. But I gave them 24 hours, and that, you know, woman was able to come in, you know, 24 hours later and have the right attitude. She wasn't that day, but the time was key. And sometimes it's space. I think sometimes we want to fix it right then in that conversation. And sometimes it's like, they need space from us. So just give them a bit of space so that they can kind of process that. I think we've obviously, you know, Betsy shared some great regulation tools. We've talked about those ways for athletes to kind of work through those emotions. But I also think we need to be attentive to the baseline of, you know, mental wellness, you know, of our athletes. So if players are coming in and they're have sleep deprived, if they're hungry, they haven't been fed nutritionally, like some of these other really basic needs, then we're already working with a really narrow window where small things can become really triggering emotionally for those individuals. So I think when it comes to what we're talking about here, the more we can help them to make better choices, Dr. Daniel Siegel always says, sometimes it's not that they won't, it's that they can't, right? Sometimes it's not that they won't, it's that they can't. They can't choose the right thing. So how can we help them to make the right choice?
What you described there, JP, actually makes me think of a little rabbit hole I went down over break about reading about the history of nuclear weapons and testing, because why not, right? So needed a distraction from basketball for a little while, and learning about how, you know, initially countries tested their nuclear weapons on their own soil out in the open, and then they started to learn that this damage, you know, from radioactivity would spread for miles and miles and miles. And so then they moved to more isolated places and islands in the Pacific. And then they went underwater, and then eventually they stopped doing it. But the point is that they recognized the damage that their initial decision made, and they tried to mitigate it, knowing that we still have to have tests. We still have to try to figure these things out. But can we do it in a way that does the least amount of collateral damage to, in this case, the environment, but what we're talking about, to the rest of the team or even to that individual? And I think that's where creatively, as coaches, there's still some work, at least for me, that has to be done to figure out better ways that I can help to mitigate or help to do the things that we're talking about here without just making an excuse of saying, Well, they have to deal with it. And that's the way it is.
And I think there's probably no area that I'm more passionate about this than accountability. Like, we need accountability in our programs. We have to hold players to a standard. And yet we oftentimes are dropping the friggin' nuclear bomb on the situation right on it. And it's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. There are so many better ways of holding athletes accountable without us blaming, shaming, getting in them, you know, all these threatening, aggressive type coaching tactics and behaviors, to more effective ways that come back to, hey, reminding them of their choice. They choose the wrong thing, then they're choosing this consequence. Just really simply with the right tone, the right body language. To do all that effectively, though, the hard part is we have, you know, the challenging part is we have to be emotionally regulated ourselves, intentional, and we have to learn new skills in coaching, right? And that's really difficult. And I'll tell you, if I look at, you know, I'm probably disciplining the most in my home these days with three small kids. And the hardest thing for me in those situations is not necessarily the tactics, the strategy. It's being able to be in the right frame of mind myself that I can use those, right? And not resorting back to kind of my default reactions.
Yeah, when I think about that question too, Nate, you know, where and when do you drop the bomb? Let's say, when you mentioned accountability, JP, I'm thinking about the various ways in which a coach can hold individuals or a team accountable. And it's so interesting sometimes what they choose or when they choose to do that, right? It's like, oh yeah, that was a really little thing compared to the thing that you let go and didn't say anything about before. And it's because they're worried about that fallout. And so thinking about, okay, what's my fear? What am I worried about? Well, I'm worried if I tell the team this, they're going to be really upset. Okay, fear for me is information. Whatever you're afraid of, that often gives us information about where the work needs to be done. So is it trust, right? Do I need to make sure that I have a more trusting relationship, which often equates to safety, that I have a more trusting relationship with this individual or team so that they know when I'm telling them this really explosive thing, that it's going to be okay, that they're still safe, that we will figure this out together. So when I think about like dropping the bomb, when and where, yes. And also what's missing in order to make this as safe an environment as possible to withstand the blast.
Well, I think at the end of the day, when we come back to this original question of, are coaches responsible for the way their players feel in response to a decision or something that happens during the season? I think the answer is yes, dot, dot, dot. And so are the players. That we have to accept that the way that we show up and that the way that we interact with our players and the way that we respond to their emotional state matters. Matters for the individual. It matters for the team. It matters for their parents. It's going to matter for your administration. It matters. And we have to accept that whether we want to or not. At the same time, it's not just us. And I think that's the place where coaches probably struggle, is that we don't really know how to teach players to be more skillful in being able to navigate their own emotional state as we go through the season. And certainly we're not going to cover all of that here in just a 30-minute conversation. And I'm sure there are topics that we'll return to that hopefully will help coaches to become more familiar and more comfortable with that. But at the end of the day, JP and Betsy, I think the thing that stands out the most to me when it comes to this conversation is that a player's emotional state is often their truth in the moment. And whether we think that's reasonable or not, that's another piece of the puzzle that we have to accept, because it's information. And it's information that can help me to make better decisions, both in how I interact with that player, how I do this the next time I have to have a conversation about moving somebody out of the lineup or changing a strategy, whatever it might be. But for too often, I think in my 22 years of doing this, I've made decisions without that information, without really an awareness of what is the emotional story that that player is telling themselves or is going to tell themselves or is going to go home and tell their parent. I've just been neglectful of that completely. And I think if there's one thing that could help my coaching going forward, it's this idea of how do I create more space and more skill for me to be able to elicit that information to help me be a better coach and use it going forward to make better decisions for everyone.
All right, coaches, as I send you on your way today, I want to share just one thought with you that I had a few weeks after Betsy, Nate, and I recorded this conversation. And this comment really kind of pertains to playing time, which is the common source of disappointment in teams. So I had a coach who I support who was really frustrated. He had felt he was doing all he could to support a player who was upset about their role. All the things that we came up with for him to support this athlete through the disappointment of losing his starting spot, this coach had ticked all those boxes. And so my message to this coach was this: let it go. While it's important for him to enforce the standard around being a good teammate, even when you're not getting the playing time you want, it's also important, I think, as a coach, to allow to accept that players can and will feel disappointment when their role isn't what they want it to be. They're going to have some emotions that come up, and that's okay. While we don't want a bunch of selfish athletes who only care about their minutes and pout and are bad teammates, I don't think we want a bunch of athletes who don't care about playing time. So we as coaches need to be clear on our standard around playing time. It's okay to feel disappointed. We are here to support you. And we expect you, though, to still show up and be a good teammate even when you don't feel like it. All right, that's it for today's episode. I hope you found it valuable. I know this is a really hot topic in coaching, and so hopefully you got a lot of value out of it. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast, share this one with your friends and your coaching staff, as well as leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can get the notes to this and every episode of the podcast by subscribing to our newsletter at tocculture.com. Thanks again for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast.